We'll be continuing our study of Hebrews 11 this morning and beginning verse 32. But if a biography was written about your life with the kind of honesty that we find in the biographies in the Bible, what kinds of things would stand out about you to someone who read the story of your life, say, 200 years from now? Now, not considering all the unknowns about what things might be like 200 years from now, because we have no idea. But maybe we might think that our life story would be a bedtime story to put people to sleep. If you think you've lived a pretty ordinary life. But think about the honesty in the Bible as it tells the life stories of some of the heroes of the nation of Israel. I think I mentioned this once not long ago, that the Bible is unique in this way because most biographical accounts of a nation's heroes will leave out or really minimize the bad parts and probably even embellish the good parts to make their nation's heroes seem especially heroic. The Bible doesn't do that. When someone who is even as significant for the history of Israel as Abraham, think of Moses or David, when they messed up, when they made some really bad decisions, we know about it because the Bible tells us. And sometimes when we think about some of those heroes of the nation of Israel, sometimes it's some of their really bad decisions that stand out the most to us. So could the same be said about a biography of your life? Now, if someone wrote your life story, hopefully a significant part of it would be to tell about your coming to faith in Christ, telling about your life as a Christian, your service for the Lord, things like that. Would a telling of your life have some stories of times of great faith and times of great testing? And if it did, could the times that you messed up, made some dumb decisions, overshadow some of the good things about you? If everybody knew about those times when you messed up, made some bad decisions. It might. Because those kinds of things seem to be what stand out the most. If someone was reading your life story, would they ever say they called themselves a Christian when this is the way they thought or talked or did this? Those are the kinds of things that seem to stand out. Well, in Hebrews 11, verse 32, we have some more examples of people from Israel's history who are commended for their faith. But most of them who are listed here in this verse made some really bad decisions and times that were recorded for us in the Old Testament. Some times when their faith really seemed to be lacking. It might be surprising to us that some of these made it into chapter 11 because those negative things about them stand out so much to us. But before we begin to look at these examples, we should remember that these people, all of them who are listed in Hebrews chapter 11, are not here for us to admire them. They're not here to show us what we could never be. That these are the ones on a pedestal who have so much faith, you could never be like them. That's not the purpose. The purpose of this chapter is to remind us about the times that some really average people did the right thing, sometimes. And they trusted in our completely worthy God. Now they should have done that all the time. But in those times that they did, they're an example for us that so should you. God is worthy of our complete trust. So if you are having doubts or worries or anxieties sometimes, so did all of these. We have it on record in the Old Testament. But there were some times that stood out when they did the right thing and they trusted God, even in some very difficult circumstances. And it should be our aim as we look at these examples to always do the right thing, to always trust God completely because He is fully worthy of it. This morning we're looking at some more examples that are similar to ones we've been looking at over the past several weeks in Hebrews 11. When their faith in God, through their faith in God, the outcome of the circumstances that they were in was what they desired. And sometimes it happens that way. Where we're planning to pick up next week, the short-term outcome of some of those circumstances, even though they too had faith, some of those outcomes look bad in the short term. But we're going to see when we look at that next week that their faith in God was still well placed. They were still right to trust in God. And things are not always what they seem. And we'll see that more next week. In verse 32, we have a transition. The author of Hebrews has come to the end of what he believes is necessary to prove the point he's trying to make. He gave some details about the faith of Abel. Then a little about the faith of Enoch and Noah. He got considerably more detailed about the faith of Abraham. There's a little bit in there about the faith of Sarah. Then back to Abraham again and his faith as it related to his son Isaac. We saw a little about the faith of Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. A little about the faith of Moses' parents. And some details about Moses' faith. A little bit about the faith of that nation of Israel in Moses' day. The faith of Joshua and that next generation of Israelites. The faith of Rahab the harlot. We've seen he's been working his way chronologically through the Old Testament. He's picking out a few examples up through the book of Joshua to show us that having faith in God has always been the right thing to do. Those who trusted God when they did, they were doing the right thing. And having a right relationship with God has always been about having faith in God and trusting the promises that He has made, not about the works of the law. The author of Hebrews could go on. He could keep working through the Old Testament. The book of Hebrews, and chapter 11 in particular, could have been a really long chapter. He could have very thoroughly continued on proving to us through examples that we should always trust God. In verse 32, he begins with this rhetorical question. What more shall I say? It's like he's saying, do I really need to go on? I mean, I could. There are plenty more examples, but you get the point, right? He's starting to run out of time, maybe space in this the paper he has to write on as he wants to get this letter to this church. So he says to them, verse 32, for time will fail me if I tell of. And he's saying, I could keep going here easily. But for the sake of time, rather than reminding them about more and more stories of men of faith with all their details, he's shifting here and he's just going to list a few. The few that he lists here in this verse, they know. They understand. They know why he would mention them. He doesn't have to give them all the details. He could give them many details about Gideon. Some amazing things that God did through the faith of Gideon. But they know. You know, just that hearing his name would bring many of those stories that they've heard so long from the Old Testament into their minds. And they remember what happened. They've been studying the Hebrew Scriptures their whole lives. Well, since we probably don't know the Hebrew Scriptures quite as well as they did, we're going to look at a few of these details, these men listed here in verse 32. Maybe mostly for the sake of those who are so unfortunate as to miss out on Jared's excellent teaching through the book of Judges that just finished recently. We talked about Gideon. And maybe you remember some of those important things about Gideon, but maybe what stands out the most to you when you hear that name Gideon were the times that his faith wasn't all that it should have been. When you hear about Gideon, maybe you remember some of his doubts, some of his fears. But let's remember what God was asking Gideon to do and what he did do when he trusted God. Let's remember that in Gideon's day, most of the people of Israel were doing what was right in their own eyes. Which means most of the people of Israel in that day were doing what was evil in God's eyes. Many of the people of Israel had turned away from the one true God and were following after idols. And so God had turned them over to be oppressed and punished by the Midianites. Well, eventually, some of the Israelites cried out to God to free them from the Midianites. Now, it doesn't seem that the people of Israel were really all that repentant because they didn't turn away from the idols. They kept going after them. But they came to God and said, "Please rescue us from the Midianites." God was gracious. He commissioned Gideon to free them from the Midianites. But first, he was supposed to destroy some of those idols in his own hometown, idols that were actually owned by his father. And what might stand out to us about that account of Gideon is in Judges chapter 6, verse 27, that he did it at night. He destroyed those idols in the middle of the night because he was afraid. And we might think he shouldn't have been afraid. He should have trusted God and did it in the broad daylight. But what should stand out to us is that he did it, even though most of the rest of the people in that area would want to kill him for doing it. That took a lot of faith to do what he did. And after that, and we probably all remember about the sign of the fleece that Gideon asked for twice, because he was afraid. He was unsure. He was having some doubts. He didn't need to do that. That might stand out to us that he was doubting about this. He didn't need to. But what should stand out to us is what God was about to have Gideon do. He was going to go up against a very strong army. An army of 135,000 men. And Gideon was only able to scrounge up 32,000. 32,000 against 135,000. Well, he was a little unsure about those odds. With a little bit of reassuring, he was willing to trust God and go to battle. But you remember, before that actually happened, God said, "That's too many people. I can't deliver the Midianites into your hands with this many people. You might take the credit." And so God got the number down. Anyone who was afraid was permitted to go home. Only 10,000 stayed. That's 10,000 against 135,000. God said that's still too much. God brought the number down to 300 men. 300 against 135,000. It doesn't sound like good odds. On top of that, the main weapons of the Israelite soldiers were going to be torches, clay pots, and trumpets. Doesn't sound like good odds. But Gideon was willing to trust God and lead those 300 men into battle against 135,000. Now that is some incredible faith. But you know, this doesn't tell us as much about Gideon as it does about how worthy God is of putting our trust in Him. Because God accomplished exactly what He said He would do. With only 300 Israelite men, God defeated the Midianite army for Israel. That's what God is capable of. Gideon was right to trust Him, and so should we. Barak is the next one who's listed in Hebrews 11:32. Now, for Barak's story, we turn back to Judges chapter 4 and 5. And what probably stands out the most in our minds about Barak, if you remember anything about him at all, is that he would not lead the Israelite army to war unless Deborah went with him. And now you remember. You remember that story, right? But here too, Barak and his men were to go up against a much larger and far better equipped enemy. And considering that Deborah was a prophetess, it maybe wasn't all that unreasonable to want to bring with him someone who had a direct line of communication with God, to go into this battle, to get orders directly from God. And it's also kind of interesting that Deborah says, if I go with you, you're not going to get the credit. It will be said that a woman defeated this army. Barak was okay with that. That's actually kind of commendable. He wasn't in it for the glory. So yes, he had some fears. He shouldn't have had those fears. He didn't need to. But he trusted God. He led the army of Israel to battle with Deborah. And God gave them an amazing victory. And here again, trusting God was the right thing to do. He could have trusted God even more. But the amount that he did was right. The next mention in Hebrews 11, verse 32 is Samson. And he's another one we know about him. What we know about Samson was that he was a really strong man who had a lot of weaknesses. We read about him in Judges chapters 13 through 16. We read about some very impressive victories that Samson had against the Philistine oppressors. Killing all those Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. That's pretty impressive. But we also read of many failures in those same chapters. The times that Samson was mightiest in his victories was when his faith in God was strongest. The times when he failed was when he forgot about God and was dependent on himself and his own strength. Now that can be seen in all those chapters clear to the end of his life. After everything had been taken away from him, including his eyes, because of his pride, his faith in God reemerges. God gives Samson a mighty victory with the Philistines. When Samson had faith in God and pulled the house of worship down on the 3,000 pagan worshipers who were inside. And when we see what God did, those examples of Samson's faith, we could ask, what more could Samson have done if he would have trusted God more consistently? As impressive as it was with as many failures as he had, what more could he have done? We could ask the same of ourselves. How much more could God accomplish through us if we more consistently trusted him? And God proved that he was worthy of Samson's trust. The times that he had faith in God showed that. He could have trusted him more. Next in Hebrews 11, verse 32, we have Jephthah. Now what Jephthah is probably most remembered for was the foolish vow that he made. That when God would bring them home victorious from this battle that God was calling him to, he said, the first to come through the door of my house will be presented as a burnt offering to God. Someone has suggested that maybe every time before that, whenever he returned home, it was always the family cat that came out to greet him. Maybe he saw this as an opportunity. Or it may have always been a slave who would come out to meet him and help him to take care of his horse when he came back. Now that still would have been wrong, but it turned out to be his daughter. You remember that story, right? His only child. That was a really bad decision. But what stood out to the author of Hebrews, and should stand out to us, that once again, this was a man who was put up against impossible odds as man would see it. He trusted God. He led the army of Israel to victory. And he was right to trust God for that victory. All these examples we've looked at so far, they show us that the number, the size, the type of weapons do not determine the outcome of a battle or of a war. God decides. That was an important lesson for the first readers of Hebrews who had the mighty nation of Rome plus all those Jews against them for becoming Christians. This small number of Christians despised by the Romans and the rest of the Jews. Numbers don't determine the outcome when God is involved. The first readers of this letter of Hebrews should not look at the impossible odds against them as man would see it, because those odds don't determine the outcome. God does. So trust him. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was going to turn out the way they wanted. More on that next week. But still, God has proven that he is worthy of their trust. He has proven he is worthy of our trust. Now, David is another witness to that, and he is next in the list here in Hebrews 11:32. Now, what may first come to our minds about David, again, is his failures. Some of his failures that were severe, involving adultery, murder. That was a huge failure of faith. But remember the times that David did trust God. Remember that day when David stood in front of that giant Philistine Goliath. Remember his words. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 45 through 47. And David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Now there, David is a witness to us that God is worthy of that much faith. Little David with his slingshot against the giant Goliath with his sword, his spear, his javelin. Even when the odds look impossible, God is worthy of that much faith. The author of Hebrews enlists Samuel. Samuel was the last of the judges, the first of the prophets in the time of the prophets. Then he lists the prophets, then just generally there in Hebrews 11:32, he says, "And the prophets." There's so many of them, like Samuel. And he could go on, like Elijah, Elisha, Isaiah, Jeremiah, so many others, so many ways that those prophets were witnesses that God is worthy of our trust. So many times, even when the situation looks impossible. Well, the author of Hebrews didn't have time to outline all the ways that faith in God was validated. So many examples. He begins to summarize this even more as we move on into verse 33. He says these are the things that are true of those listed in verse 32. You'd find other examples who did these same things. He didn't mention them by name. So many of them who by faith conquered kingdoms. Now that was not because of the might of their militaries. It was by faith. God did it. By faith performed acts of righteousness. Again, it wasn't because they themselves were righteous. But some of them did the right thing in the face of danger because they trusted God. That much. By faith, they obtained promises. They trusted God. You think of Abraham, who we looked at several weeks ago. He kept trusting God even though the promise, the fulfillment of the promise God made was delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. He kept trusting God. He would keep his promises because he always does. By faith, shut the mouths of lions. Now God has shown so many times that he's sovereign over kings and nations. He's also sovereign over wild animals. Remember Daniel. Daniel was lowered into a den of fierce and hungry lions. And we know that they were fierce, hungry lions because the next day they tore dozens of people to pieces, crushed their bones before they even got to the bottom of that den. But God wouldn't let them touch Daniel. And we should know that God is capable of that. And we know that God doesn't always choose to preserve his people from death in that way. But he can when it's his will to do so. So we should trust him. Verse 34 tells us that by faith there were some who quenched the power of fire. This should turn our minds to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When they were threatened with being cast into a furnace of blazing fire, if they did not bow to Nebuchadnezzar's false god, they chose to trust God. They refused to bow to that idol. And they said, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Now it's important for us to understand that they didn't know for sure how this was going to turn out in the short term. They knew God was capable of preserving them even in a furnace of blazing fire. But they didn't know if God was going to choose to preserve them in a fire. A furnace of blazing fire. But if God didn't preserve them that way, then he would eternally deliver them by welcoming them into heaven. Either way, they were determined they were going to trust God. They're going to do the right thing, and they were right to do that. The author of Hebrews says that others by faith escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. These are all victories that God gave through faith, even when things looked bad or impossible. Sometimes things looked even worse. Sometimes people died. But sometimes God chose to not preserve their lives from death. According to verse 35, sometimes God chose to reward faith through bringing people back from the dead. He says, women received back their dead by resurrection. Now that happened in relation to Elisha. And through their faith, God brought two children back to life. That's what God is capable of. So we should always trust him because he is always capable of accomplishing his will perfectly. No matter what we are up against, God is fully capable of accomplishing things that from our perspective look impossible. Nothing is impossible with God. He is always deserving of our faith, no matter what. But we need to recognize, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did, that God doesn't always choose to work out our circumstances the way we think we would like Him to. Sometimes, even for people of faith, people who are trusting God, they're believing the truth about who God is, what God has revealed, sometimes it may be God's will for them to go through some really hard things. Like Job. Like some of the examples that we will see, Lord willing, next week. Some of them didn't survive their trials. Some of them suffered greatly. But we're going to see, even then, God is always completely worthy of our trust. Faith in God is always right. And there is a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us who are testifying to us of that fact through Hebrews chapter 11. If the Lord wills, we should be concluding this chapter next week.